Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone, and welcome to the, I don't even know what number we're at. We're over 100. The latest edition of Rider Rumblings. I am here with Maria McCormick, and we are discussing a couple of topics today. Lots of topics coming from this game. On Saturday, the Rough Riders defeated the Edmonton Elks 26-16. Not especially impressively, but they did it. And they're now preparing to play in Montreal on Thursday. We're doing this a day early this week because Murray is flying out on Tuesday because of the short week. We usually record this on Tuesdays. And, of course, coming out of the game on Saturday as well was an ankle injury to Dan Clark. We do not yet know how serious that is, but the initial speculation is that it is not good. So, what a bind they are in. Not only losing a player of that caliber at any time, but in a short week when there's only one practice during the week, what kind of predicament do you think the Riders are in with this, Mur, from so many perspectives?
That's right. I don't think they ever thought they'd be in conditions. Dan has been a bit of an iron man at his position too, eh? Like, he's missed a few games, but he's just always been that constant and stuff. And I watched him hobble out on crutches, and it's not good. I can't see if any way he would play this week, guaranteed. So you say that, it could be, come on, play. Here's a guy who came back from a car crash to not miss a game in one season. But, you know, they've got kind of depth and have Logan Bandy can maybe play center. He played a little bit in training camp and he filled in for Dan on Saturday night. They can move Logan Ferland in there. Evan Johnson's a possibility. But then that means shuffling your guards. So, you know, how do you take to a solid position and make him room? So if I was a betting man, I would bet Logan Bandy gets in there, you know, but still, that's kind of the spot. But position-wise, it's huge.
I mean, he's never started, and all of a sudden you're asking him to call all the signals. I mean, wouldn't it be Ferland simply because at least he had that one start last year in Hamilton and he has some experience? Wouldn't Ferland be the natural fallback?
That is a natural fallback, but still, do you shuffle another position to fill in it so you create another hole, another position? But I agree. I think Ferland would be a good spot for him, and Bandy can play there. But one of the things, and there's really, I don't think there's any replacing what Dan does in the locker room, does for this team. He's such an inspirational leader, and he's grown into that role. Like, just watching him, he's always kind of had a smile on his face all the time. He just loves doing the job. And even when he was trying to work his way through the media on Saturday night, he kind of looked up and just had a little bit of smile. But Rob, I think I'm giving him more thought, and sorry about that. Well, I think Ferland might be the guy that switches in there, and you play Bandy at guard and make it a little easier for a young guy to settle in. But just a huge loss, I think. And I think you and I both, you saw the way that all the players from both teams went out and checked on Dan. And you see that sometimes, but they knew it was serious, and every player's going to, I even saw a couple of the Elks out there saying, you know, patting him on the shoulder pads and stuff. So it's a big loss, and in a, you know, as we said, a huge win and a big loss. And I don't know how you come out of that one. So this will be a tough one and see what they do, because I don't know, but I wasn't overly impressed with the offensive line on Saturday night, but I wasn't the end of the world. Natty Rogers had himself a, should we say, a game might be the way to describe
it. Three holding penalties and an objectionable conduct. And
just didn't seem to really do that well. So I don't know what's going to happen. They can't make any changes. Cause
I mean, the run blocking was terrific. I mean, Jamal Murrow rushes. It's morning. Rushes, R-U-S-H-E-S, for 126 yards, and Frankie Hicks and 32 yards on 5 carries. So the offensive line did a terrific job with the running game. The pass protection wasn't what it was against Hamilton in the opener. The Riders surrendered 4 sacks, and then there was a penchant for holding penalties and ones that took the Rough Riders out of field goal range on occasion. Just the timing, 3 of them on Rogers, 1 of them on Taron Vaughn, although the one on Vaughn was kind of questionable. Still, that offensive line, the pass protection wasn't nearly what it was
a week and even earlier. The touchdown they scored.
Even though Edmonton was off and rushing.
Yeah, that was a weird, and getting pressure on them with 3. Like, there was one, I'm trying to remember the one player, I tried to find it, but they had big time. I think they got to Cody with 3 guys, and they sacked him. I went, holy smokes, that was 3-man pressure. Man, that was strange call. And really, the touchdown pass that Cody threw to Mitch Picton, that was largely to do with him with doing that nice little spinorama move to get open to the space. Does that, it credits the offensive line, but that was a big, big time Fajardian spinorama move on there to get open to throw that pass to Mitch Picton. So that was a lot of Cody. An interesting thing, and I know we're just kind of a new line in the stats, OC General. Did you see that?
But they're calling it a misconduct on the field, and then OC in the stats line, and the Rough Riders are Derek Moncrief got 3 objectionable conducts or three misconducts. And I don't think there's been 3 misconducts in one game in Alberta, in a sporting event in Alberta, since the Battle of Alberta was at its apex. And Moncrief got himself kicked out of the game. And there was a ridiculous call on Garrett Marino. Not a ridiculous call from the standpoint that the officials erred, but Garrett Marino turned a 3rd and 12 into a 3rd and 2 with an objectionable conduct penalty. And just, there's never a good time for those, but they were just so injudicious on you as far as what they were doing. And I realize football is a game of emotion, but it's also a game of a controlled emotion. And the undisciplined penalties that the Rough Riders were taking were indicative of some of the games last year. And it is really worrisome when, with this early in the season, the team can't get its emotions controlled. That game was close for far longer than it should have been, in part because the Rough Riders couldn't conduct themselves with composure. And if they played like that going into a game against, or during a game against anybody else, it would have been as embarrassing for them as it was for the BC Lions. It was for the Elks to play the BC Lions, not necessarily a 59-15, but the kind of game where it just radiates ridiculousness. And that's what the Riders are in for if there's a
relapse. I meant to look this up, but
unless they do it against Edmonton when they next
one meet. Of the things, it was only a 10-yard penalty too. Did you read that number and see that? I was up.
That's always been a 10-yard penalty.
Well, sorry, I thought it was
objectionable conduct's always been 10. So, they even took a too many men.
And that's the one. And the thing is, I never saw the extra guy trot off because I saw too many men. I was trying to count. I'm getting pretty good at counting to 13, folks. That comes from 2009. And I was trying to count them, but I never did count.
Are you counting your hairs? Sorry, nice bad joke.
I think we talked about, I'm going to talk about Larry Dean a little bit if I can.
Oh, holy my goodness. Smokes, yes, absolutely.
What a game he had. What 2 games he's had. I just kind of quickly wrote down, he's tied for 3rd in the tackles with the league with 14 now, defensive tackles, tied for 3rd with sacks, 2. He leads the league in forced fumbles with 2. And he just all over the field. And when I was preparing for the podcast today, which basically means shaving and having and showering, How are they going to get Micah Tights back on the field after two games?
I have no idea.
But Larry Dean.
How do you put him back on the field?
I don't know. Does he play special teams again? But Larry Dean is. And so Darnell Sankey's the same way. But Dean has just been.
And then they've got Moncrief. This is an amazing linebacker. Moncrief's
second
crew.
Leads the league in picks with two. And that was a great pick. And, you know, like.
And Sankey is as advertised. But Larry Dean. Sorry, just, go on. I mean, he's been terrific. You talked to him right out of the gate at camp, and he's any concerns that or doubts that were held about can he look like Larry Dean, the three-time All-Star, after missing a full season due to an Achilles injury, those have been eradicated very quickly. What a man. That hit that he had on Arbuckle reminded me a bit of Eddie Lowe clobbering Tracy Ham in the 89 West Final at Commonwealth Stadium, and that was such a game-changer. And it should have salted it away, but then the Rough Riders missed a field goal to give Edmonton additional life. And I'm not even pinning that on Brett Lauther. It was symptomatic of the kind of night the Rough Riders had when Brett Lauther misses a field goal that could have put a game away because he's so good in the clutch. But he'd made 19 in a row before that. But the Rough Riders seemed just determined to do everything possible to keep throwing life preservers toward the Eskimos. I knew I was going to do that toward the Elks.
Just another quick point.
But Larry Dean, what a play. He looks like he's 25, not 33 going on.
And let's remember, this is a different position for him. I know he's played middle linebacker his whole career, and he's playing a new position. Another interesting stat, and I don't know, maybe you can give a stats guy. He hasn't missed a game yet, and he's played in the CFL. Does that season, because he was away, count as a missed game? He hasn't missed a start.
It would count as, 14 of them.
But he's,
but that's amazing. You know, he doesn't miss a game, but then he gets hurt in an informal workout, misses an entire season, and now he's back. And my goodness, that's just, it's amazing what he is doing. And I think I'm going to talk to Mr. Dean on Tuesday in your absence, because you'll be flying to Montreal while I'm doing all the dirty work at
I'm just crossing my fingers I can get through Pearson Airport without any incidents. It's a.
Good luck.
I got an hour and a half.
I could go on a Pearson rant, but that's a different podcast.
I have an hour and a half layover in Toronto, so hopefully I have enough time. But
no, you've got about a day and a half layover in Toronto now. Good luck getting to Percival Molson Stadium by Thursday at 5:30.
It's not football, but boy, it is a little stressful flying just because you're worried about everything working out, and people are just not happy. It's just sort of a. We're flying to get someplace. Yeah, we're not flying because it used to be a moment. You know, things.
There's some days when you wish that Orville and Wilbur had just decided to go fishing, but it's still an amazing thing. I mean, what a tall order facing this team, though. I mean, one day of practice, an absolutely key member of your team goes down, so it's an emotional. There's an emotional toll as well, and you're playing a team that's just sitting there and waiting for you. And has got to be just champing at the bit to play after the manner in which they lost that game to Toronto. So if they can go there and win, this is one of the more miraculous Rider victories I will have ever seen. When you look at the circumstances that are just, there was adversity facing this team just because of the nature of the scheduling. And now with the injury to Dan Clark, if they can tape this together and even make it close, I think, hats off to them.
Yeah, and
am I writing them off too quickly?
I can actually kind of, in a minor way, explain. I kind of know how my body feels after flying back to Regina yesterday, getting up. My flight left at 11, getting up at time to be at the airport, trying to recover one day, not getting back and flying again tomorrow. Your body just kind of feels a little different.
They get charters,
they
do. Though.
They have it a little easier. But they probably didn't get home till like 2 or 3 in the morning on a Saturday, likely around, they left around midnight. You know, 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So it's going to be tough. I think it's the only point of their schedule that's really this challenging, though. I think this is one of their only spots. And I think they don't play that many Thursday night games, adding to that stuff.
You know, and after this one, they've got 9 days to wait for their next game. Nice little break. So, to throw that much in. I mean, there's just so much to clean up after that Edmonton
game. Well,
that's
another thing, too.
And
Rob, I'm going to. There's a 24-hour, you spend 24 hours thinking about the past game and you move on to the next one. Excuse me. Now, this one, the media is going to want to talk about Saturday's game, and the Riders are already had to move on to the Alouettes game. So they're going to have to talk back about that, which is a little bit of a challenge. It kind of makes it tough for them. They're moving ahead and we still want to, media still going to want to talk about the past, and that makes it a little bit tougher.
Yeah, but we get one day of access.
That's the reality of the situation.
Unavoidably, but
they've already moved on. They've moved on from this game. They've had to. They probably had meetings. They would have had meetings today, and then just do some light stuff, and then tomorrow I don't even know if it'd be a real practice time. Maybe just a walkthrough. Because what can you do? And you don't want to get them tired. You got to get them off their legs, get them rested and stuff. But
It's a lot to throw in front of them. I mean, it's not like they're playing a real powerhouse in Montreal, but my goodness, that's just so much to throw in front of a team. I keep repeating myself, but it might surprise us. I mean, I didn't think that the Rough Riders would be as ragged as they were against Edmonton. So maybe they'll come out against Montreal and it'll be 51-2 for the Rough Riders. You never know with the Canadian Football League, but this just seems to be as formidable a challenge as you can throw at a team in short order. And I did some number crunching too. It just for the Rough Riders to be without their center for what is presumed to be an extended period is so rare. Like since 1959, there's been 63 seasons, including this one, since 1959, and 8 centers have played in 57 of those 63 seasons. So it's been a bastion of stability, having that center as the linchpin. Very rarely do they have to deal with this, because rare is the season in which there's any kind of interruption with the continuity. I mean, from 86 to 95, Mike Anderson played every game at center. From 65 to 1970, Ted Ernest played every game. There was Neil Habig. There was Larry Bird. You go on Jeremy and on O'Day. And on. There's Dominic Picard. There's Jeremy O'Day. They've had such reliability at center, and Dan Clark has been part of that succession of reliable players and tremendous players. And it is so rare for them to be in a situation such as this. And now they have a short week in which to spin out of it. It's really, there aren't many precedents for this in Rider history, because that sent as nomadic as the world of professional football is, and as unpredictable as it is, if you look at Rider history, they've always been able to say, okay, well, this person's a center. Everything else might be a mess, but this person's a center. Even when they were missing the playoffs every year, Bob Poley was a center from 79 to 84. You didn't have to worry about that. And then Mike Anderson took over, and et cetera, et cetera. But suddenly, this is a predicament that they've rarely faced in our lifetimes.
That's great stats work, Rob. People are going to, how do you find that out? Like, how do you just all in your brain? Is that what takes up that space instead of hair on your head? But
well, most of it's in my brain, and it just occurred to me the other day that this is an angle we don't really talk about that often. I mean, Dan Clark's missed a few games here and there, but they all do. But I mean, since 2015, you've comfortably been able to say far more often than not, Dan Clark at center. Even last year, when the offensive line was chaotic, you could say Dan Clark at center, and he played through so many things last year. I mean, he was banged up last year, but he played and played and played and played well. There's a line of succession at that position, and you can pretty much look at all of them and say Plaza of Honor, Plaza of Honor, Plaza of Honor, just right down the line. And Dan Clark will absolutely be in there one day, and that's what they're faced with, and that's what they're trying to replace.
I don't think you
replace him. You can just kind of fill the spot.
And it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks at least, if not long. If there's a broken bone in there, or if it's even if a badly sprained, that's still 6 to 8 weeks to recover from. So there's really no way of him coming back. But as Craig Dickinson always says, next man up. Everyone says next man up, and
there's next man up if you've got to find a defensive halfback on short notice. When you've got to find someone to replace Dan Clark, that's just not not plug and play. What a predicament. Where do you think all this?
I just wanted to give a little bit, and I forgot to write his stats down. Mike Adams had a pretty good start to this season too, I think.
Eight tackles the first game, and then his first pick on Saturday. His first pick since October 20th, 2018. So his last, and he had two picks that season. So his last three interceptions have been in games that Chris Jones has been coaching for one team or the other. Guy. Mike Adams has been tremendous.
He missed all half the season.
And you knew he'd be. He just said, behind you.
He missed half 7 games. He missed 7 games with that broken, dislocated wrist. But there's another guy on the outside, on the a little older player, a little more veteran player. And good for Mike. You know, he's also one of those leaders. He's another guy. If he gets injured, boy, there's bodies there, but you don't replace that type of leadership and what he does.
You look at solid guys on that football team, and there's a lot of solid guys. This is a really tremendous mm-hmm. group. I don't think there's anybody on that team you can look at and say, I don't really think that much of that person. And there haven't always been teams like this. But you know, Mike Adam is such a solid, solid guy. And you can utter reliability when he's in there. He can make plays in so many ways. And this defense is designed for players to make plays in so many ways. I mean, look at on Saturday, AC Leonard's dropping back in pass coverage a lot of the time, right? You've got Mike Adam making a sack in the opener and then having an interception. He can go from making a play in the offensive backfield, as he did in the opener, to making a play 40 yards downfield, 50 yards downfield, as he did in the game on Saturday. That's a 60-70 yard range of on the field where he's made plays.
Before we really get close to the end, but how do you clean up the penalties, Rob? What does Craig do? Craig said he's going to have a heart to heart talk with him. I think he had lots of heart to heart talks last year. I don't know what you do with Garrett Marino. You can't bench them because you don't bench guys at this level if you're taking penalties. You just try to get them to settle things down.
Especially in a short week, you can't reinvent anything. So
does a heart to heart say, guys? Maybe clip together all of what those penalties, the consequences of those penalties, you know, especially that one goes from 3rd and 2 to 3rd and 12 or 3rd and 12 to 3rd and 2. And made the game. It could have been interesting if Nick Arbuckle could actually hit a receiver in stride. He had a pretty tough game finding receivers. He made a great pass down the sideline to Manny, but boy, he had some passes that were just to go, wasn't even in the ballpark that.
Well, John Hodge on Three Down Nation tweeted that he went 18 minutes. That Nick Arbuckle went 18 minutes without a completion on Saturday, and wow! But I'm going to draw a hockey analogy. The '82 playoffs, the Regina Pats had one of the all-time goon shows in the history of hockey, and were duly suspended and fined, and there were several sanctions against them. But they felt persecuted by the officials at one point, which was a ridiculous contention. But that was the culture of the Regina Pats at the time. So they decided they were going to play turn the other cheek. And this was during a playoff series. And suddenly, after being combative at the whistle every time, and post-whistle and, you know, often into an intermission, as soon as the whistle blew to end a shift or puck went into the stands, or whatever, as soon as the shift was over, as soon as the play stopped, they'd do a 180 and back to the bench like robots. If that Regina Pats team can control its emotions when they were known to just completely combust, if on a dime they can make that turn after being this goon show to conducting themselves like choir boys in the playoffs, if Bill LaForge was able to get into their heads in the '82 playoffs that you can turn the other cheek, surely Craig Dickinson could get through to these players. Yeah. It's an emotional game, and there are impulsive reactions, but it can be done. I saw a hockey team do it, the last hockey team in the world that I would ever expected to do that, but they did in the '82 playoffs. They didn't sustain it, but they were able to do it for a game or two. Then by the end of the season, they were all suspended again.
But I understand that Derek Moncrief was suitably contrite after that. What he cost the Riders, and maybe it's kind of one of those things because got a chance to see a rookie step up in there and play. And Doki, a U of A.
Yeah.
And just I watched him some plays because as soon as I realized it was him, he's a U of A guy. I think he's from Alberta, from Northern Alberta.
Yeah, Jaden Dahlke. And it's like, what a predicament he'd been put in. I thought Edmonton is going to pick on him. Either they opted not to do it or they tried to do it and it didn't succeed. But the defensive performance was really not visibly adversely affected by the absence of Derek Moncrief, which says something about Jason Shiver's scheme and says something about Jaden Dahlke. Yeah, or maybe it says something about the Elks. And how does Stephen McAdoo not go after that?
Never, I don't think they went once at him. Yeah. Maybe they did, but Nick was probably overthrew the receiver again, Nick Arbuckle. So
I mean, I watched Ronnie for a lot of years, and anytime that there was an injury in the secondary or in somebody else, there's Candy's tail. Anytime there was an injury in the secondary or anything, Ronnie would go after the next guy. I remember the 89 Grey Cup, Tiger Cats had an injury, and suddenly Earl Winfield is playing defensive halfback. Earl Winfield, typically a receiver. If you look at Don Narcisse's touchdown in the, in the 89 Grey Cup, it was scored on Earl Winfield. Kent went right after Earl Winfield. How did the Edmonton Elks not go after the rawest of rookies in that situation?
Maybe he was that good to me.
I think the Riders, to a degree, schemed themselves a bit out of a predicament. But you just that should be just easy prey for a veteran football coach for any football team.
I watched Jaden jog off the field. As happened to be who's one of the last guys into the locker room, and just a smile you couldn't wipe off his face. There's a guy, play Commonwealth Stadium for the team that, to the Rough Riders, beat your home team you grew up cheering for. It was a pretty cool moment.
And now Samuel Emelis, who grew up cheering for the Alouettes, plays against Montreal this week.
That's going to be interesting to see.
So there's all sorts of heartworm. I wish we had an entire week to do advances for this Montreal game, because there's so many issues arising from that Saturday game.
Rob, I know I'm just going
to
wrap up here with something. You've been jumping on the in-game interviews a little bit on Twitter and stuff on TSN.
I hate
those. But I will give them credit. They handled the Hall of Fame game very well. Well, I like the way the in-game interviews, because that's what it's all about. The Hall of Fame game is a celebration of the past of the CFL, and I like the way they did that. But I'm with you on the in-game interviews. Like, they're just – there was this one – I fast forwarded through on the game, but with the Eskimos present, it just seemed to go on forever and ever.
it may still be on.
But anyway, I have another interview to get to. So, Rob, want to outro us?
Does this mean we're done? Does this mean we're through? We will reconvene next week to discuss the Riders game against Montreal, and honestly, who knows what we're going to see from that one. After Saturday, I can't really call anything with any confidence or reliability. Not that I've ever been a stalwart.
Let's not forget, they still won.
they won the game, by the way.
The thing that kept scratching my head, and I got a few marks on it, but they still won the game. And the whole atmosphere and the whole feel of it is that they lost. And maybe that's...
And they won. Give them some credit. They won without Duke Williams.
That's another...
And a bit of a makeshift receiving core, and Mitchell Picton with a very big touchdown in that situation, and the 2-point conversion to punctuate it. So there was that. There were 5 more sacks after having 8 in the regular season opener against Hamilton. There were a lot of things they did well, and a lot of aspects of that game that were rather exasperating. But that's what makes the Canadian Football League kind of fun and kind of
interesting. Sometimes Cody completed the pass, Mitch, wide open pass, but we know what happens in the CFL. Sometimes they don't get completed, but I think Mitch has got solid enough hands. But what a great moment for a young guy who's just grounded out and waited for his opportunities. And, he gets a chance and he makes the big play and gets the game winning touchdown. Great moment. His parents were in the stands. Yeah, his mom's always at every practice. His dad too, almost every practice.
And he's such a good person. I had a chance to talk to Mitch. He prefers Mitchell. He said his mom and his girlfriend both call him Mitchell, so he'd like to be called Mitchell.
Because I see it everywhere.
My mom called me Robert, but I am so happy for him. You just can't help but be happy for such a tremendous guy. So there is that. And that was another pass exceeding 20 yards for Cody Fajardo. He also had a 36-yarder to Shaq Evans, who made a Shaq Evans-like catch. So the Riders, for a second game in a row, have been able to dent a rival secondary over the top, which was not their forte last year. My forte is certainly not wrapping up a podcast several minutes after you suggest it, so I'm going to smoothly, yet ineffectively, segue into this outro that I'm under orders to read. Ahem. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. Give us a 10-star rating if you would be so kind. It helps us grow the podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Why do all these things, regardless of the outlet, always say wherever you get your podcasts? That seems to be the mandatory phrasing. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email Rob at rvanstone@postmedia.com, and we'll read it on the show, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me, Rob, on Twitter @RobVanstone, or Murray @MurrayLP. Murr, thanks so much for doing this as always. Thanks so much for everybody to for listening or watching or whatever, however you happen to follow us. For Murray McCormick, for Candy, for Creed and Martel, our fine producer, I'm Rob Vanstone. Thanks for your time. Take care, and we will do this again next week.